our discussion in Tattva Sandarbha. With a little review on the previous section, at least a part of the previous section, specific reference is this nice, lively discussion we had during questions and answers about this section that's in red. I'll read the little paragraph. The Vedas alone should be our pramana because from them, in fact, have been derived all departments of knowledge, mundane and spiritual, among all schools of thought in human society since time immemorial. Big statement. Pretty bold statement. And we read a little section from 11th canto, chapter 20, where Krishna says the same thing. And then there was some reference to Bhaktivinoda Thakur from Sri Krishna Samhita saying not exactly the same thing, but something similar. Authentic scriptures of various cultures reveal aspects of the Absolute Truth, but among these scriptures, the Vedic literature distinguishes itself by the scope of its revelation, which is, it's not a slice of the pie, it's the whole pie. Its vastness is unequaled. And then the next section similarly says, the Vedas and their supplements offer a great variety of approaches to the Absolute Truth for people in different situations of life, on different levels of spiritual development. The Vedic corpus includes thousands of texts, yet when we carefully study the whole, we find it very consistent. Then, you know, the fruit of those that follow the Vedas is evidence that the tree is a good tree because the fruits bear good fruit. Which doesn't exactly express this part. The Vedas are the source of all knowledge. So there's another reference from the introduction to Sri Krishna Samhita, which I've included some portions here. It's more specific about sectarianism, but his message is that before there was sectarianism, like different religions, there was one truth. And here's the passage. Sectarianism is a natural byproduct of the Absolute Truth. Uma, you are asking this. When acharyas first ascertain and instruct the truth, with a capital T, it is not polluted with sectarianism, but the rules and regulations received through disciplic succession regarding the goal and the method of achieving it are changed in due course of time according to the mentality and locale of the people. That's time and the modes of nature acting. As Krishna said in that 11th canto, chapter 20. A rule that is followed in one society is not necessarily accepted in another society. That is why one community is different from another. You know, not only in Vedic culture, you know, within, amongst Christianity, you know, like the Northern Irish and the Southern Irish have had, you know, decades and centuries of war over this way of, that way of looking at Christ's teachings. Or, you know, it's baffling, you know, in the Middle East, how this group of Muslims and that group of Muslims are, you know, what do we understand about that stuff? But they, you know, somehow they have, their way of dealing with a misunderstanding is, here's a gun, and boom. Sword, dagger, you know, go blow people up, or whatever it is. So, sectarianism. But the source is one, and then time and the modes of nature. So then he continues, as a community gradually develops more respect for its own standards, it develops hatred towards other communities and considers their standards inferior. These sectarian symptoms are seen in all countries since time immemorial. It's not identical to what Krishna is saying, but quite similar. And then these are just sections that I extracted from a longer essay, but this is prominent amongst neophytes and found to some extent amongst Madhyama Adhikaris. Amongst Uttama Adhikaris, however, there's no trace of sectarianism. So what's the solution for sectarianism? Become an Uttama Adhikari. Easier said than done. Meanwhile, we have Madhyamas and Kanishtas. And so there's, although the source is one, the modes of nature and time make it many. And following his father, the son, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, expresses in the very first edition of The Harmonist, which was like a weekly paper, I believe, he wrote, harmony is possible only when one has obtained a firm footing in the Dharma, or the function of the soul. The Dharma of the soul. Not the Dharma of this ritual, that ritual, but the Dharma of the soul. Very specific. Bhaktisiddhanta's language is very specific. And again, this is the Uttama person. Although swan-like persons may accept a particular practice from birth or childhood according to instructions they have received, they nevertheless remain indifferent and non-sectarian, Paramarupa. This, you know, this interfaith example. Okay. So that's just a little review on that passage that I had highlighted in red, kind of little closure to text 10. And then we covered text 11 this morning. And now we're ready for the next section. So we covered 11 and we're headed into 12. There's the next section. Next section, it spans quite a few verses. We're only going to cover two of them up until our break. And the broader picture of this section is the pranas are even more important for us than the four Vedas. That's the next section. So now just again step back, and this pramana kanda section, two, has two and three within this section. So this is the Srimad Bhagavatam is the supremely authoritative source of knowledge. We started with 9, 10, and 11. And now we're going to go to the next section, which says something that isn't popular in the scholarly world, and that is that the Puranas are Vedic. So it's a bit of a challenge. During Jiva Goswami's time, it was prominent also. And, you know, it's the tradition carries on to today, where the notion is the Vedas are not Puranic. So you're going to see this chart a number of times. And I'll go through some of it now, and we'll refer to it again and again. You'll see it about 8 or 10 times. So this is a product of the Mayapur Institute for Higher Education. They created a chart that shows the four Vedas. Those are, and that's in that little box right there. That's the four Vedas. When Vyas divided the Vedas into four, there they are in that box. And each of these four, that's Rig, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva, they have another four divisions. And we're going to, in the course of what we're covering just now, we're going to hear about something or other Brahmana. This means it's one of the four Vedas. It's one of the four parts of these four Vedas. Okay? Samhitas, Brahmanas, Aranyakas, and Upanishads. For those of us in this room, we've mostly heard about the Upanishads. You know, Prabhupada translated one of them. Sri Isho Upanishad. And that's the philosophical portion that deals with what is Brahman. And then these deal with rituals found within these four Vedas. Then there's over here, this box says Upaveda. It's things like Ayurveda. We've all heard of Ayurveda. Well, most of us have heard of Ayurveda. And then there's what Dronacharya learned, Danur Veda. Who did he learn that from? Parashuram. So that's part of the Vedas. That's part of the, you know, the over on this side, this is called Shrutis over here. And then there's these things that people have to learn in order to study this. You know, it's six items. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was Nimai Pandit, he was a professor of grammar. This one, Vyakarana. And then we heard one of the things that Jiva Goswami did. He wrote a grammar text on the grammar rules with names of Vishnu. Right? Remember that? From our very first day? So that's one of the six things. Before you can study this, you have to get an A over here. That's the graduate school. That's the undergraduate school. So from the time a young boy is 13, he gets his, from 5 to 13. That's years. From 5 to 13, he studies, you know, the undergraduate stuff. Then he gets his Gayatri mantra that gives him access to these. Yes? And that's written in it. We're going to see in the next time you see this slide. This Sanskrit over here is different than this Sanskrit over here. It's still Sanskrit. But this is like super technical and, you know, let's say our ISKCON devotees that learn Sanskrit. You know, like Gopi Pranadanda. He studied Sanskrit at Columbia University. And Hridayananda Maharaj studied Sanskrit at Harvard University. They learned this kind over here. But, you know, to learn this kind over here takes years and years and years and years and years, because there's all this stuff that's rules and rules and rules and rules and rules. And like, phew. People today really don't have the patience to learn, what to speak of teachers that can teach it. So, but there's European scholars that think, you know, we're it. And these guys over here, poo-poo, and those guys over there. So that's part of the issue, is the poo-poo on these guys over here. So the Sanskrit is different. These are Smritis, and there's different sections in the Smritis. We're going to be largely speaking about these two. That's the Puranas. And you see the two boxes below. There's Mahapuranas, major Puranas, and then there's minor Puranas called Upapuranas. There's 18 of these, and there's 18 of those. And then there's Upaparinas. There's like another division altogether. Not to confuse you. And then over here, there's another box. And that's the six darshans. When we spoke about Jiva Goswami's life, we heard about that. He went to, where did he go? Varanasi or Banaras. And he studied under Madhusudana Vachaspati. And what did he learn? These six, the six darshans. Each one of them takes many years. He learned all six of them in 1 year. Super scholar. You know, like Krishna learned the 64 arts in 64 days, and normally it takes, 8 years. So, and I want to bring your attention to this one right here, because we're going to hear about it in text 13. The Mimamsaka, these guys over here, they are Jaimini Rishi was a propounder of Mimamsaka. Those of you that have read Krishna book and you know about Govardhan Leela, Krishna spoke this philosophy to his father. Karma Mimamsa philosophy, an atheistic philosophy. Maybe you didn't take note of that, but now you know. Go back and read it. And when he's asking his father, what is this yajna that you've arranged? Right after the pastime of the wives of the brahmanas come and bring food to Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys, and they have big lunch. Then they continue herding the cows and they see Nanda Maharaj has this big festival being prepared. So Krishna asks him, what's this? Remember his question? I mentioned it earlier this morning. Is this family tradition or is it enjoined in the Vedas? Right? It wasn't actually, it was last night. Because tradition is one of the ten. Tradition is one of the evidences. And then his father said, it's enjoined in the Vedas and we're honoring Lord Indra because we've had good rainfall. Our livelihood is dependent upon rainfall. Indra was very kind. So we're offering offerings to Indra and in gratitude for what we've received from Indra, the rainfall and now ample production. So Krishna then spoke atheistic philosophy. Very surprising. And the philosophy was atheistic. Whether there's God or there's not God, it really doesn't matter. I'm simplifying what he said. Because above whoever it is that's in charge of things, there's the law of karma. God, an Ishwara, a controller, has to administer according to the laws of karma. So really, you don't have to worship anybody, just do good karma. And you'll get good result. You don't have to worship anybody. Don't be a theist. Be an atheist. He didn't use that language, but. And now, really, we're not dependent upon Indra. We're dependent upon Govardhan Hill for this reason, that reason. So let's take all this paraphernalia and offer it to Govardhan Hill. So that's what they did, because Krishna said it. But Krishna wanted his father and the elders of Vrindavan not to think, oh, he's just this whimsical kid. So he manifested a form of Lord Hari and accepted and ate all the offerings and asked for more. That's the Leela. And it continues. So Karma Mimamsaka philosophy is mentioned in 10th Canto Bhagavatam. It's mentioned also in the commentary of text 12, which you'll see when we get there. So that's that box down here. Mimamsaka, and it's really small print, so you probably can't read it. It's hermeneutics. You remember this morning I mentioned epistemology and hermeneutics? What does that mean? Get a dictionary and find out what it means. Here's what it means. It says in the box. It's rules for interpreting scriptural texts. So Jaimini, he looked at the Vedas and established rules for interpreting the texts of the Vedas, and the Supreme Lord disappeared, just like Krishna did with his father. Rules for interpreting texts is hermeneutics. Like that question that was asked about, in Prabhupada's purports, he speaks about worldly things, and it's not with reference to scripture, he's just making a comment on worldly things. Are we to take that as pramana? What was the Sanskrit term? Vaidushika pramana. Yes? Huh? Vaidushika pratyaksha. So, when dealing with matter and worldly events and things, are we to take, you know, a pure devotee's words is also as good as scripture, or are we to only take things that are directly referenced from scripture? That's a hermeneutics question. And then there's epistemology. What's the means of verifying stuff? So epistemology is in one of these charts over here too.
That's nyaya.
Rules of logic. Now, that's also atheistic. At least Gotama wasn't a theist. But you can be a theist and have rules of logic. And you can be an atheist and have rules of logic. So which is the one to accept? Which is the pramana to accept? It gets complicated, right? Especially if you're not, you know, a simple person, a Hare Krishna person that just likes kirtan and, you know, prasadam. But let's go back to, you know, Prakashananda Saraswati saying, okay, ordinary people, you know, are ordinary people. That's okay. But you're a sannyasi. And you shouldn't be like ordinary people, just, you know, kirtan and prasadam. You're supposed to be studying Vedanta Sutra and then teaching Vedanta Sutra and, you know, having people sit straight and, you know, follow Vedanta Sutra. That's what sannyasis are supposed to do. Why are you carrying on like a fanatic, a sentimentalist fanatic? And people look at us like that, so we should, you know, sit straight and learn the Bhagavatam, which is Vyasa's commentary on Vedanta Sutra, and we're studying Tattva Sandarbha, at least, you know, part of it, because it helps us understand Srimad Bhagavatam better. And why are we studying Srimad Bhagavatam instead of Vedanta Sutra and chanting Om? Why are we doing what we're doing? What's the basis and the foundation for that? That's why we're doing what we're doing. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing. Okay. Now, we'll make some other references. Oh, we'll say over here, this is the word tantra. This is, you know, we have our Vaishnava tantra. Like, for example, how do you do deity work? Tantra means the procedures for things. How do you worship the deity? Or I mentioned, one of the literatures, the manuals that Jiva Goswami wrote was a manual on how to observe Janmashtami. He wrote a whole manual on, it's a how-to, it's a tantra. It falls in this category over here. That one right there. Whoops. Tantras. And then there's modes of nature. You know, and we don't like the other ones. We like sattvic modes of nature. So our deity worship is based on this one over here. Narada Pancharatra. That's over here. This is in that category. It's Vedic. But it's Vedic in this side, not on this side. We'll come back and see this chart a whole bunch more times. I'm just giving you, you know, the issue that Jiva Goswami is addressing is people say humbug to this stuff over here. They say the Puranas are not Vedic. And the four Vedas are Vedic. And anything else ain't Vedic. And with their arms across their chest. Prove me wrong. Okay, we'll take you on. That's what Jiva Goswami is doing. On the authority of the four Vedas, they say the Puranas are Vedic. That's where the train is going. Get on board. Let's go. Pulling out of the station. Okay, so he begins this section. We're going to cover verses 12 and 13. And verse 12 starts with Veda Shabdhasya. The four Vedas have some problems. What's that? They're impossible to study in completion. And you see there's this little 6% with an asterisk. That's in the next page, the next slide. You'll see this again. Rather than do it ahead of time. Then he says, there's another problem. What's that? Well, even if you had, whatever you do have, the meaning is very obscure, difficult to construe. Then, here's another problem. Even those who are sages, and we're not sages, even those who are sages have explained them in different ways and they disagree amongst one another. This sectarian thing that we saw the slide before. And in contrast, the Itihasas and Puranas, this section is going to explain, they're substantially, interesting language, substantially non-different. It's cool language. Substantially non-different from the Vedas, and they explain the Vedas definitely, or definitively. So the Itihasas, he's jumping the gun, you know, they're better. That's the next section. But now just to say they're Vedic. So now here's that statement you saw before. The letters are much smaller, but sorry. It's impossible to study the four Vedas completely. Why is that? Well, it says in Matsya Purana that for each one of the four Vedas, there's 1,130 branches for each one of the four sections. So you have to multiply 4 times 4, because there's 4 Vedas each with 4 branches. And each of the 4 branches has 1,130 divisions. So 4 times 4 times 1,130. That's the total number. Now, existent today within the four Vedas and their branches, look at the numbers. 11 Samhitas, 18 Brahmanas, 7 Aranyakas out of 1,130 times 4. And at least Vaishnavas accept 220 Upanishads. Those that aren't Vaishnavas only accept 108. But so we took the larger number. With that larger number, add up these and divide it into the total number of original Vedas that were presented. That's where the 6% comes from. So imagine You receive a copy of Bhagavad Gita, and it has 6% of the 700 verses. And not even necessarily the best ones. Maybe it's chapter 1. And you're supposed to understand Bhagavad Gita from whatever the number is, I forget, 17 verses or something like that. 11 verses, 20 verses, whatever the number is. You're supposed to study and understand Bhagavad Gita's message from that? Not very likely. Very challenging. So to understand the Vedas properly, they're not even available. 6% are available, and you're supposed to study the Vedas and understand the message of the Vedas? That's a problem. Admitted by the scholars of the Vedas, by the way. That's a problem. Now, this little note here says, how did that happen? Time. Krishna says, time I am, the destroyer of all things. Of course, the Vedas are eternal, but their manifest condition may be available and then unavailable. Manifest and then not manifest. And the time energy happened. One of them was in terms of fire. During the life of Madhvacharya, it's described in the biographers of his life that he traveled extensively throughout India several times. And one of the things that he was really good at is he had a Shastra magnet. He just like gathered scriptures. And he had this capacity of perfect memory. He had many amazing capacities. But one of the places where he went to study, the teacher was, you know, jealous. He was willing to teach, but he wasn't willing to give a copy of what he was teaching. And he would only teach people if they agreed that you can't have a copy of the text. Madhvacharya said, no problem. He just heard it once. He went down the next day and wrote it down because he had a perfect memory. And in this way, and you know, at other places, he had brahmanas make copies of books, and he had a huge, huge library in Udupi. That was his headquarters. Unfortunately, they didn't have digital copies. And there was a fire. And the entire library was destroyed. Very sad. Huh? Not after his life. In text 27 of Tattvasandarbha, Jiva Goswami, like scholars are supposed to do, he did, he cites his references, and one of his references, Madhvacharya, he said, the text that I am quoting here, A or B, I have personally seen, or Madhvacharya has personally seen. And in his writings, he refers to them, and so my reference is to his writings where he refers to them. Although they're not available today, during Jiva Goswami's time. But Madhvacharya is authoritative. Then there was another. There was a huge library in Mathura. And then another misfortune came. One of the military groups came into Mathura, took over Mathura, you know, Muslim groups, and for 6 months they took the books and used them for fire for cooking meat. Like, you know, in-your-face kind of behavior. You know, they knocked over the temples and tried to destroy deities and took the scriptures and used them for cooking meat. So the library was gone. The influence of time, destroying all things. So, etc. And in this way, you know, even from the time of Jiva Goswami, those kinds of things hadn't happened. But references that Jiva Goswami makes of books that he, with his own eyes, he saw and inspected, they're not available today. Just time destroys things. Unfortunate. Although Jiva Goswami kept an extensive library, Some books are just not available, even what he had put in his library. There's a recent event. Perhaps some of you are familiar with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's time. How he got the title Saraswati was he wrote a book on astrology, astronomy and astrology, and it was called Surya Siddhanta. It was an extensive mathematical calculation of from statements in that Jyotisha section of the Vedas, because they needed Jyotisha. That's one of the things you need in order to understand when is an auspicious time to perform a yajna, because that's what, you know, the four Vedas, they speak about yajna. So when is the right time? When is etc. So he did a whole book on Jyotisha, Surya Siddhanta. And when the TOVP, the Temple of Vedic Planetarium, wanted to reference the book, they found that there was a copy listed in the card catalog in Calcutta, and they went to find it, and the book was gone. Then a devotee raised his hand some months later and said, I stole it from the library. And if you want the book, you got to get me as being part of the team for the Temple of Vedic Planetarium. They said, sure, you can be part of the team. So now ISKCON has a copy of Surya Siddhanta that the library in Calcutta used to have. And in this way, time takes away things. And agents of time. So, in contrast, the 6% of the Vedas that are remaining is quite different. Somehow the Puranas have survived. And especially the work of Sridhar Swami, who personally verified each and every one of the verses of these two. Srimad Bhagavatam and Vishnu Purana. Vishnu Purana is the chief text for Sri Vaishnavas, along with Padma Purana, and Srimad Bhagavatam, the chief text for followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he wasn't even a follower of either. He was from a different sampradaya. He wasn't, sectarianist. He was a proponent of worship of the Supreme Lord. In fact, his worshipable deity, this detail, was Lord Nrsingadev. He was a Nrsinga Bhakta. Okay, so now here we're going to see that nice chart again. Excuse me. This last line at the bottom is a little distinction between the Itihasas and Puranas. Because it's in the chart, that the next slide is the chart. Both are listed. Small distinction. There's 18 principal and 18 minor Puranas, and there's a certain format of them. Puranas are histories, but they have a special role to play within the Vedas, and we'll see that in a moment. Purana, the word Purana, comes from the Sanskrit root word that means to complete. So the Puranas are meant to complete the Vedas. We'll see that in a moment. It's an important message. And the Itihasas, they're also histories, but the style is different. And the two major titles that are in the category of Itihasas are Mahabharata and Ramayana. Mahabharata's author or compiler was Vyasadeva. Ramayana's compiler is Valmiki. And then there's other versions of Ramayana that were before him and came after him. In fact, it's eternal. We'll hear that in a bit. They just manifested them when they were unmanifested. But the scripture is eternal. But there's some distinction between these two. So now we're going to look at this chart again. And here's some, you know, those of you that are new, this language is probably confusing. But anyway, there's, those of you that are new, you know what the word loka means? Loka? Loka means planet. Like Krishna loka, Vaikuntha loka, loka. Loka means planet. So there's laukika Sanskrit and there's alaukika Sanskrit. What's that? Laukika Sanskrit is worldly. Or sometimes called classical Sanskrit. That was a spoken language. At the time that the Vyasadeva compiled the Vedas, that's the language that people used. They didn't use French and German and English and Chinese and Russian. They used Sanskrit. Laukika Sanskrit. It's a conversational language. And the Vedas, that right-hand portion, were written in that language. And then there's another Sanskrit that's not conversational and is far more technical and is accessible only to the Brahmanas because you have to learn these six things and only Brahmanas were entitled to learn those six things. And then after learning those six things, study the four Vedas that's in this other Sanskrit because these are keys to this. So this is Alaukika. Now, there's a certain group of scholars, the na-na-na-na-na-na scholars, that say it's only these that came from Lord Narayan, and those were conventional people, you know, that Vyasadeva felt sorry for, and so he composed something for those folks. Something like that. So now, if you remember that chart from the very first kind of like overview slide at the very beginning, the third item said, even the sages who have explained the Vedas in commentaries disagree among one another. So here's the Vedas. And these are the explanations of sages that have explained them, and they differ from one another. The six darshans. And they're radically different from one another. Now, what Prabhupada said on multiple occasions is nobody comes up with anything new. That is to say, if somebody comes up with something new, trace it back and it's one of these six or combination of these six. That's what they is. If you know these six, you know everything. And somebody comes up with something new and you can say, ho, ho, ho. Big Bang cosmology, that was said long ago. Whatever you come up with, the atomic theory, that was said long ago. Really? And maybe, who knows, maybe those people that came up with those theory got a Brahmana to translate some of it and came up with the theory and said it in English. Quite possible. What was the fellow? His name is Oppenheimer. The first atomic bomb exploded. He was like, you know, whatever, the engineer of that thing. And when it exploded and he saw, you know, pictures of it, you know what he said? Kalos me. Time I am the destroyer of everything. Apparently, to understand how to build one of those things, they studied the Vedas to learn how to build one of those things. That's one of the reasons why the Vedas were not meant to be accessible by people that didn't have character. You just learn Sanskrit and study the Vedas and build bombs and do other stuff. Knowledge in the hands of a person without character is very dangerous. Call it modern education. Technology in the hands of a person without character is very dangerous. Just any day of the year, open a newspaper. Remember that statement. Technology in the hands of a person without character is very dangerous. So the first element of education is character, not information. And when character is missing, it's called Kali Yuga, the age of information technology, with no character. Very dangerous. And everybody knows it, and they just keep, you know, adding more information. Okay. Now, you're going to see this fellow a bunch of times. I took it from the website. I was looking for, you know, images for a critic. So, critic of the Vedas might say, so the Sanskrit term is Purvapaksha. It's a European artist that painted a painting of a classic critic. So whenever you see this guy, you can just understand he's the critic. And one of the things that Jiva Goswami does, he doesn't shy away. Like I said it twice already. He doesn't take the critic says and just tuck under the rug and sail on like there aren't any critics out there. He knows who they are. He studied them in Benares, you know, like, you know, the classic guys that are the critics. And he knows what they say, and he knows the logic behind what they say, and the followers going rah, rah, and they're, you know, how that influences and filters and different permutations and combinations in the world of his time. And he takes them on. And he doesn't always utter, you know, the critic will say. Fortunately, Gopi Pranadana, being the scholar that he is, he also knew what the critics say, and then he addresses them. So you'll see the flow of the logic of why Jiva Goswami brings one thing after the next is he's addressing those that may have some criticism or some objection. Some opponent may say, whoa, if you contend that the four Vedas are unavailable in their fullness, only 6%, thus obstructing efforts to glean the essence of the Vedas, then simply study Vedanta Sutra. What's Vedanta Sutra? It's Vyasa's composition that summarizes the Vedas. So if the Vedas are only available in 6%, Vedanta Sutra is there 100%. Just study Vedanta Sutra. No problem, right? Problem. What's the problem? We showed it in the previous chart. Even the sages who have explained Vedanta Sutra in their commentaries, they disagree. So, we'll, you know, the man that has the true understanding of Vedanta Sutra, please stand up. And they all stand up. So how are you to discern in the spiritual marketplace who has the right understanding? Now, those of you that are experienced devotees, who's this? Balaram. Who's that? Who is it? Ramaharshan Sutta. Who's Ramaharshan Sutta? He's a disciple of Vyasadeva. And he's a disciple of Vyasadeva. When Vyasadeva divided the Vedas, he put Ramaharshan Sutta in charge of what? The Puranas. The fifth Veda, by the way. We'll hear about the fifth Veda in a moment. And when Balaram, who was on tour because he got upset with Krishna. Balaram got upset with Krishna. It was a leela. So that he wouldn't take part in the Kurukshetra battle, because if Balaram's on one side of the Kurukshetra battle, the other side is finished. So he wasn't there. Krishna was upset. He was upset with Krishna. What was he upset about? Huh? Was Balaram upset about? Rukmi? Huh? Say it louder. Subhadra's marriage? No. Huh? Bhima. What did Bhima do? Huh? I can't hear you. That happened during the battle. Before the battle. I'm a little confused. Yes? Yeah. So you can't do that. I'm out of here. I'm going on parikrama. So he went to all the holy places to purify the holy places and not take part in the Kurukshetra battle, except he did come back and, you know, defended the honor of Duryodhana. Why did Bhima do this? So he's on parikrama. He's on visiting the holy places. And one of the holy places he went to was where Romaharshan Sutta, the person who Vyasadeva put in charge of all the Vedas, the 18 and the 18, and he's there reciting the Puranas. He's reciting the Puranas, and Balaram comes into the assembly, and everybody stands up because the Supreme Lord has arrived in our presence, everybody except one person, Romaharshan. So Balaram can understand he's not qualified to recite the Puranas. So what did he do? What's he holding in his hand? A piece of grass. Kusa grass. And with the kusa grass, boop, he touched the chest with a piece of soft grass and he pierced the heart of Romaharshan Sutta, who fell to the ground, a bloody mess. And people said, oh, that was pretty extreme. Well, Balaram said, well, if you want, I can bring him back to life. Said, no, you've done, but how are we going to go on hearing the rest of the Puranas? Well, Balaram said, no problem. The son of the father is representative of the father. His son can speak. And so his son, Ugra Shrava Sutta, or we know as Sutta Goswami, he spoke the Puranas in fullness. We're going to hear his name again. Now, when Romaharshan was killed, what did everyone say? What was one of the things that people said? He wasn't really a Brahmana. Right? Remember that? And then there's this language of Anuloma Pratiloma. Familiar with that? What does that mean? It means when, those of you that are new, you won't understand this so well, just listen. A woman in Vedic culture is to marry someone of her same social group, or a man becomes her husband who is of a higher social group. So that's not what happened. Romaharshan was the son of a woman who was a Brahmana, and his father was a Kshatriya. Now, all the sages, Vyasadeva gave him the position of a non-Brahmana. He took on the position of his mother, but it was like, you know, kind of mixed. Pratiloma instead of Anuloma, Pratiloma. No one said anything until this happened, and then they said it. You know, he wasn't really qualified. Balaram understood. It wasn't just because of the marriage. It was the way that he was born. He just, you know, didn't have character. Character to recognize the purpose of reciting the Puranas is to glorify the personality of God. And when he comes, you respect him. Well, I'm speaking the Bhagavatam, so I got to stay here and sit. So the reference to this is only Brahmanas can study the four Vedas. In contrast, even the principal speaker, Romaharshan, and his son, Sutta, so when Sutta was speaking, all the Brahmanas were assembled, headed by Shaunaka. You know, the true, purebred, pedigree Brahmanas. They were hearing Sutta speak as they were hearing Romaharshan speak. And Vyasadeva authorized. So a non-Brahmana can study the Puranas. The world can study the Puranas. We can distribute Srimad Bhagavatam to our heart's content and everyone can receive it. But it's not the same with the four Vedas. The They don't even have the skills to enter into the knowledge of how to learn the Sanskrit. What to speak of teachers to teach the Sanskrit. So, that addresses that that problem that's within the four Vedas. Now here comes 12.2, text 2 of, to part 2 of text 12. From both the, this is a Mahabharata painting, by the way. Who's this? Krishna. Who's that? Shishupal. Who's that over here? The blind king? Dhritarashtra. Who's over here? Bhishma. Where's Bhishma? Bhishma's over here. He's got his ears covered. And who's that? Well, normally it's painted with Bhima with a club in his hand. He wants to smash Shishupal on the head. In this case, he has a sword. He wants to stab him in somewhere. And Krishna's holding his hand. He's, you know, don't chop him. Let him go on speaking. So that's Mahabharata scene. And here's a quote from Mahabharata. Identical verse found in the Manu Samhita that says one should complete the Vedas, that's the four, with the Itihasas and Puranas. And Jiva Goswami speaks the following, two things. The name Purana comes from the Sanskrit word Purana, which means completion. So you complete the Vedas with the Puranas. And then he gives the example, if there's a golden bangle and it needs some repair, you don't use cheap tin to complete the golden bangle that needs repair. You use gold. It's of the same quality as the bangle, that which completes the bangle. Similarly, the language of Purana means it's of the same quality. Very intelligent, huh? Well, here comes our friend again. The critic may say, but if the Vedas include the Puranas and Itihasas, we are going to have to identify as Purana something different from what everybody in the world thinks is the Puranas. In other words, it has to be something that's within the four Vedas. Otherwise, it's not Vedic. You know, and so now this gets to this problem of the two different types of Sanskrit. So if it's of that Alaukika Sanskrit, then it can be part of the four Vedas. There are portions of the Rig Veda and of the Taittiriya Upanishad that have some histories. It has descriptions of creation. We'll see this again with the Mimamsaka folks, the Jaimini and his friends. That's what they say. You with me? If we're going to say the Puranas and Itihasas are Vedic, I mean, that text over there has the wrong Sanskrit. It's got to have this Sanskrit, not that one. And so there are portions within the four Vedas that describe the process of creation, like in the Rig Veda. Deals with worldly things. And there's some passages, you know, stay tuned. We'll deal, you know, the Taittiriya Upanishad also deals with some historical stuff. So that's what it means. the Puranas and Itihasas are Vedic. It's within those four. It has to be, because otherwise they can't even be called Vedas, because the Sanskrit isn't the same. Look at those guys with this other Sanskrit. That's not Vedic. That's a new composition, you know, modern stuff. That's their argument. So, Jiva Goswami knows the argument. He studied Mimamsaka philosophy when he was in Benares. He knows what they say. So now in this Pramana Kanda section, he's taking it on. He's, you know, responding to it. This objection is answered as follows. The Puranas and Itihasas are in fact non-different. Why? Because they have a Purusheya source. That's their non-difference. But there are differences. What's the differences? The differences are in terms of intonation and exact order. What's that intonation and exact order? If you're going to be a scholar of the four Vedas, you have to first learn those six things. And one of those six things speaks about word order. And one of the six things speaks about meter and intonation. And certain of the Vedas, they have this, and certain other ones have that. And if you don't get it right, the meaning changes. Here's an example, even in English, because I'm not a Sanskrit scholar. In English, if you say, the man walked into the room, there's the subject and the object, and then the verb. The man is the subject. Walked is the verb, into the room. You can't change the word order. The room walked into the man. So word order makes difference. But in this Laukika Sanskrit, the endings tell you which is subject, which is object. And so the word order can be whatever. But in the Alaukika, this Vedic, Vaidika Sanskrit, word order is very important. And not just the word endings, but the word order. You change the word order, changes the meaning altogether. It can just be nonsense. And then there's a Sanskrit term for, you know, not only how you pronounce the Sanskrit words, but the meter in which they're chanted and the melody with which they're chanted, and it's really technical, which isn't true with the Puranas, for example. It's said that one of the six Goswamis was named Raghunath Bhatta, and he had a very sweet voice. So when he would recite Srimad Bhagavatam, each verse he had to recite in a different melody and sing it, because it was meant to be sung. And his singing was so sweet, the cuckoo birds would sit on the branch of the tree and listen to his singing. Meaning, like, people would listen to the sweet singing of the cuckoo birds, because their singing is so sweet, the cuckoo birds would come and sit and listen to Raghunath Bhatta sing. Because it was so sweet. Yeah, cuckoo birds. They make a certain sound that's very pleasing to the ear. More, even sweeter still was the sound of Raghunath Bhatta. But in the Vaidika or Alaukika Sanskrit, the one on the left, the rules and rules and rules. You don't know the rules, you know, forget it. You know, you won't be able to properly convey the message of the Vedas, nor will anyone hearing you understand it either. So here is the concluding verse of text 4. And I'm going to... The question at the end is, what's the significance of this? So here's the statement. The non-difference of the Vedas and Itihasa Purana, on what grounds? On the grounds that they both, the Vedas and Itihasa Purana have the same Upurusheya source is implied in the passage of the Madhyayana Shruti, Vedic text. Thus, indeed, the breath of this supreme being constitutes the Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, Atarvangi Rasa Veda, Itihasa, and Purana. So what's the significance? Not only the Puranas are saying they're Vedic, the four Vedas are saying they're Vedic. That's the significance. Okay. Well, somebody may think, well, that's one verse. It's, you know, a fluke. There's all these other things that say other things. Well, Ityadi is the same, Jiva Goswami, and so forth. So we're going to see, and so forth. This is a summary statement. This is not taken from the book. It's my little summary. To substantiate this last verse of text 12.4, the Brihat Aranyaka Upanishad is a very formidable part of the four Vedas, which establishes the Vedic nature of the Puranas and Itihasas. That's the train that he's driving right now, Jiva Goswami. He cites more evidence from those four Vedas, as well as Puranas and Itihasas, saying they're not only Vedic, they're specifically called the fifth Veda. Well, wait a minute, our friend may say. There's this Mimamsaka school, which Jiva Goswami studied when he went to Benares. And here's their claim. They claim this thing that we saw before. What's that? These original four Vedas, they had sections that were Puranic. There's only 6% remaining. Those 94% included those sections that were Puranic. Vyasadeva was very compassionate. Poor fellows that aren't bright enough like us to be able to study Alaukika Sanskrit. So what did Vyas do? Well, what he did was very compassionately, very mercifully, he wrote something for those ordinary folks. And the unintelligent people of Kali Yuga. So those that everybody today calls Purana and Itihasa, that's a modern creation. Vyasadeva's modern creation. They're nice. We can't call them Vedic, and we certainly can't call them the fifth Veda. That's nonsense. There's four Vedas, and they're in this Alaukika Sanskrit. And that was the teaching of Mimamsaka philosophy, and that was a long time ago, and it's still existent. Scholars today pick up Jaimini's, you know, stuff, and they say, hey, we're an exclusive group. We're the new smarta brahmanas. We know this Alaukika Sanskrit, and those other people over there, they're sentimentalists. They say that. It's cute. You know, they can go play in their sandbox, but we're doing the real thing. So here's the refutation. There are numerous citations from the Vedas themselves. From the four Vedas, there are numerous citations which say the Puranas are the fifth Veda. Itihasas and Puranas are the fifth Veda. And next slide, we're going to see some of them. The Ityadi and so on. The Vedas, next, Vedas emanated, We're going to see the text from Srimad Bhagavatam, no, Skanda Purana. The Vedas emanated. Now remember, the Vedas are eternal, right? They're not creations. They're co-eternal with Krishna. But they were manifested. We heard Krishna say, at the end of the day of Brahma, he goes to sleep, there's this partial annihilation. I again, Surajay, I again manifest them or sent forth the Vedas. The eternal Vedas, not creations. Even creations of Krishna, they're eternal. They were manifested from Brahma's mouths, as the Puranas are also manifested from Brahma's mouth. The source of them is the Aparusheya source, and they're just as eternal. They're co-eternal with the four Vedas. Well, here's a puzzle. How can they... They're talking about history. And history means time. You know, past, present, future kind of time. So how can you can have past, present, future that's eternal? That sounds like a contradiction. Well, you know, the personality of Godhead, like Vyasadeva, knows past, present, and future, no problem. And he can state events before they happen. No problem. And the third point is the Aparusheya authority and the Vedic nature of the Itihasa Puranas. There's multiple statements within the portions of the Vedas. The four. The Vedic Samhitas, remember that chart on the left? Samhitas, Brahmanas, Aranyakas, Upanishads, those four divisions. Each of the four Vedas had these four divisions, there are statements in them. Would you like some samples? Here they come. That was a yes. Here's one from the Atharva Veda that says, Rigsama, Yajur, and Atharva Veda appeared from the Supreme Lord along with, what's their source? The Supreme Lord, along with the Puranas and all the demigods residing in the heavenly planets. That's nice. Here's another one. Again, from Atharva Veda. He approached the Brihati meter. That's one of those lists of six things that you have. This meter is one of them, one of those six. Before you get access to the four Vedas, you have to learn meters. And certain of the yajnas have this meter, and some other ones have that one meter. So approach the Brahmanas approach the Brihati meter. And along with it, they had access to the Itihasas, Puranas, Gathas, and Narashansis. They became favorable to him. One who knows this verily becomes the beloved abode of the Itihasas, Puranas, Gathas, and Narashansis. So there's a little explanation right here that says, what's these things? I had to look it up. What's a Gatha? Well, it's another meter of a particular set of mantras that are found within the four Vedas. Gathas is a certain meter. And Narashansis, these are within the four Vedas. They're ballads narrating heroic acts of gods or men within the four Vedas. And then there's the Itihasas and Puranas that are recognized by the four Vedas that they're coexisting, not modern creations of Vyas, but they're coexisting. We'll get to what Vyas did in, you know, a few more verses. Next, from Gopatha Brahmana, one of those in the left side subdivisions of the four Vedas. In this way, all the Vedas were manifested along with the Kalpas, Rahasyas, Brahmanas, that's one of the four Veda divisions, Upanishads, Itihasas, Aranyakas, Anvakyantas, and Puranas. So in other words, the Vedas are saying they were along with us. They didn't just come in a recent time. And there's one that's called the fifth Veda as well. Indeed, Rig, Yajur, Sama, and Atharva Veda are the names of the four Vedas, the Itihasas and Puranas are the fifth Veda. Chandogya Upanishad, you know, a big scripture. Now, I haven't had the opportunity, but I have god brothers who have had the opportunity of interacting with some of these scholarly people. I call them puffy wuffies, that say the Puranas aren't Vedic. You people are sentimentalists. So these devotees that have read or are a little familiar with Tattvasandarbha, they refer to this verse of Chandogya Upanishad and the Brihat Aranyaka Upanishad, etc. And the other side becomes silent. Because they, you know, the persons they learned from never told them about those, and they haven't read those, but they're there. The four Vedas are saying the Itihasas and Puranas are Vedic, and it's not just within the four Vedas. They're the fifth Veda. Got it? Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj was sharing with me, and I heard it in the recording of his class. He was having this dialogue, written letter exchange with one of these puffy wuffies that was saying, you know, people, you Hare Krishna people are sentimentalists. You know, that you're studying what you're calling Vedic literature is not even Vedic. Then he quoted these verses, and the man didn't respond after that. They're powerful. We're doing the right thing, studying Srimad Bhagavatam, following Jiva Goswami. We're in good hands. Okay. One who thoroughly studies the Vedas along with their six limbs. We'll see the chart in a little bit. The six limbs of the Vedangas is part of, the left side. The stuff on the left side. And the Itihasas and Puranas becomes a true knower of the Vedas. You have to study. They're not optional. Okay, I have to go quickly here because we're already at, my goodness, 12 o'clock. So this is text number 13. All that was just a preamble for text number 13. And there's five parts. First, we're going to see again reference to this Skanda Purana in the last verse, so take note. The Skanda Purana states, long ago, Lord Brahma, that's Lord Brahma over there, the grand father of the demigods performed severe penances, and as a result, the Vedas appeared. Sasrajay is the Sanskrit. We saw that in earlier slides. Sasrajay. And it's going to come up again. Sasrajay. You'll see it again. He's manifesting that which is eternal. He's not creating it. Along with their six supplements. That's not the six darshans. It's those things on the left side of things that you need to do to access the Vedas. And their pada and krama texts. That's like, you know, things you have to learn to get those six things together. Then, the entire Purana, note it's singular, not 18 and 18. The original Purana was singular. Then the Purana emanated from his mouth, composed of eternal sound, and consisting of 1 billion verses. 1 billion. The one Purana. 1 billion verses. It is the unchanging sacred embodiment of all scriptures. You should know that of the various divisions of this Purana, the Brahma Purana is the first. End of quote. So, Jiva Goswami points out This verse is dispelling, it's confronting or challenging or dispelling the following false notions. The Puranas are not Vyasa's recent creations. They were there as the fifth Veda, other than the four Vedas, manifest from Brahma's mouth. And they're not a subset of the four Vedas. They're a standalone section of the Vedas, the fifth Veda. And now this note at the bottom, the entire singular Purana later was divided, 18 and 18. Not only divided, that's what the Vyasa part, but he condensed it from 1 billion to 400,000. That's a task. Take 1 billion, not 1 million, but 1 billion and condense it down to 400,000 and not lose the essence. You don't have any staff. You just like do it yourself. No computer, no secretary. He wasn't distracted by email and text messages. He just... And it's composed of eternal sound. Okay, so now we'll go on to the next text. Still with reference to that Skanda Purana, he explains the figure 1 billion cited in the Skanda Purana verse refers to the number of Purana verses existing in Brahma's domain. In third canto Bhagavatam, it gives a similar description, starting with the words in Sanskrit, beginning from the front face of Brahma. There's one of his front faces. He has four. Gradually, the four Vedas became manifest. In this passage, we find the statement, then Brahma created the fifth Veda. Same passage from third canto. The Puranas and the histories from all his mouths, since he could see past, present, and future. This is text 39, this is text 37. So in this same passage, he created the four, he created the fifth. Jiva Goswami's comment is, in this case, the reference is to the fifth Veda, the Itihasas and Puranas. Okay. There are additional references to this fifth Veda nomenclature, which he then gives. Here's some of them. From the Bhagavatam, I'm not going to read them because of time, from the Moksha Dharma, that's Moksha Dharma, where's that from? Mahabharata. If the Itihasas and Puranas were not Vedic, this is logic, this is Nyaya, if they were not Vedic, they would not be specified as the fifth in such statements as these, since counting necessarily involves things that belong to the same category. Cool, huh? You'd have to call it something else than the fifth Veda if it's not in the same category. Okay. I'm racing forward. So now there's additional references that he makes. One is from the Bhavishya Purana that says, the Veda, written by Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas, is the fifth Veda, and it is known as the Mahabharata. Well, the Puranas and Itihasas are combined together. In this case, it's just referring to the Mahabharata. And then another really nice one from the Chandogya Upanishad of the Kautumbiya branch of the Samaveda. says the same thing. What's that? Sir, I have studied the Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, the fourth or Atharva Veda, and the Itihasa Purana, which is the fifth Veda. So, Jaimini and you Vimamsaka folks, excuse me, but you're propagating false teachings, and all you modern scholars that refer to it, excuse me, but you haven't read the Vedas properly. These are the fifth Veda. They're not just Vyasa's modern composition, like you guys have been saying for several centuries, since Indology got ramped up during the British occupancy period, especially. He didn't say that in the Sandarbhas. Okay, so this is the last verse of this section, and we'll stop. Thus is refuted the frequently raised objection that the Itihasas and Puranas said in the Brihat Aranyaka Upanishad to emanate from the breath of the Supreme Lord are included in the four Vedas and therefore have no separate existence. The same is stated in the words of the Brahma Purana, is the first. That's the Skanda Purana reference that was at the beginning of text 13. And there's a picture of the cover of some rendering of Skanda Purana. And we haven't finished the section. We just covered 12 and 13, and it goes up through the beginning part of 15. That's what we'll do this evening. So what's Jiva Goswami wanting from us, or wanting to do to help us, or help this, the puffy wuffies out there in the universe understand? He would like them to understand that the Puranas and Itihasas, they're not only Vedic. Excuse me. They're not only that the Vedas are not only the best source of knowledge, pramana, but that includes the Puranas and Itihasas. And don't make this, scholarly mistake, sub-scholarly mistake, of saying the Puranas and Itihasas are not Vedic. The Puranas and Itihasas are Vedic. The Vedas say they're Vedic. And don't say that the Itihasa and Purana, if they're to be considered Vedic, they have to be within the four Puranas, because otherwise the Sanskrit is different. So those other guys over there that say they're Itihasas and Puranas, that's not Vedic, because the Sanskrit is different. Well, gentlemen, reasonable gentlemen out there in the scholarly world, the four Vedas say there's a fifth Veda. It's not part of the four Vedas, the Puranas Itihasas. They say it. Get with it, guys. Any comments or questions? But there's more to this section, by the way, this evening. He's pretty thorough, huh? Systematic. And he's just getting started. He's just doing pramana. Wait till he gets to the other stuff. How do we access that pramana? How do we connect with it? And, it includes how to not connect with it, like offenses and things. He covers the 10 offenses. He's really thorough, comprehensive, and systematic. Questions? Yes. Do we have a portable? I can give you mine. He found it. Thank you very much. Raise your hand. Okay.
First question, Maharaj, you said that at 13, the boy gets Gayatri in the Vedic system. 5 to 13, they study one separate section, and 13, they get a Gayatri Diksha, and then they study other section. Right? So, I'm trying to understand that Gayatri initiation, how is it with our current Hare Krishna initiation? So, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu might have also received that initiation at 13 for studying Vedic scriptures, but then he got Harinam Diksha from Isharpuri later on. So, how is that Diksha stand with our current Gayatri Diksha?
It depends on the tradition. And I'm not really knowledgeable about this, so I can't give something, that spans different traditions and so forth. So I'm reluctant to comment. Commonly, not universally, but commonly, Gayatri, the Upanayana, is received from a family guru, not from someone in disciplic succession. So that makes it really easy. And the rest very much depends on tradition, and I'm not going to go there because I'm not equipped, I'm not knowledgeable enough. Sorry.
Second question, different question is, Vedas were brought into written form at the beginning of Kali Yuga, right? So one could argue that...
At the end of the previous yuga, the beginning of Kali Yuga, juncture.
Yeah, at the starting of Kali Yuga. So one could argue that they must be very relevant for Kali Yuga. Must be very relevant for Kali Yuga.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why they are brought into written form at the beginning of Kali Yuga.
Well, dividing the Vedas into four is also relevant. Because originally it was one. We'll hear more about that. Yeah. But it was divided into four. We'll hear about it. And then the rewrite of the Puranas, they were rewritten because they were also... We'll hear more about it. You're way ahead of the game. Your intelligence is too penetrating. But yes, they are relevant. They are relevant. We'll hear some more about it. Parashramuni has a lot to say about it. Father of Vyasadeva. He's a, yay, Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas fan. Because he understands that he's the person, he's not just a Vyas. He's an incarnation of Krishna. And he gives his reasons why he says that.
But my question is that Jiva Goswami is kind of saying that section of Vedas, the Alaukik section, that's not relevant anymore right now.
The four?
Yes.
Well, he's not saying it's no longer relevant. He's saying it's only 6%. It doesn't carry the same weight as the Puranas and Itihasas. Because they're, he gives the reasons. They're available in their fullness. They're accessible to people in general. They convey the meaning of the full Vedas that are only 6% is remaining. So they're more value. You're way ahead of the game. He didn't get there yet. He's going to get there. The Puranas not only are Vedic, but they're more important than the four. He didn't get there yet. You're already there. Hang on. Hold your question until we get there. Okay? Over here and up front.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. So, in the six darshans, you had been consistently calling them as atheistic sections of the Vedas. In that, there is also the Sankhya section, which is Kapila Dev's.
The atheist
Sankhya.
Kapila.
So that is atheistic Kapila?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Specifically, the atheist Kapila.
So the atheistic Kapila also gave Sankhya, and then there is a...
Well, the original Kapila gave devotional, and the other one gave... He was a Pondraka Kapila.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, in the front.
Someone argued with me, a scholar, that I agree 96%, 94% of the original Vedas are missing. But why do you people conclude that these Puranas are filling in the information in those 94%? The information contained in 94% missing from the Vedas, how can we conclude that that information is there in the Puranas?
Stay tuned. It's coming up, coming attractions. I'll give a little hint, and then we'll hear it in more detail. There's reference coming up of the curse of Gotama. I'll narrate it now. Stories are nice. You can hear the story again later. Gotama had done austerities. Lord Brahma was very pleased with his austerities. Brahma offered him a benediction. He was his son. And the benediction was, I'd like to be able to produce grain to feed people. Brahma gave the benediction. There was a famine. Gotama invited the brahmanas to come and take their meals while the famine was going on. So they were very happy to have that kindness. And then after the famine was over, they wanted to go back to their residences. But Gotama said, no, 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 stay a little longer. And, you know, one way of narrating this, this is from the 12th canto Bhagavatam. And elsewhere. Stay a little longer was a few months. It kind of happens like that in Vedic culture. You know, would you like a little more prasadam? And they put, you know, like that. So it happened many times. And so finally they had a little conference amongst the brahmanas and they decided, we got to do something. We want to go back home. So they tricked Gotama. They made a calf of straw and placed the calf of straw along the path that he walked in the morning to go take his bath in the lake or river. And when he was walking, they were waiting, and he kicked the calf, and they all shouted, oh, you've killed a cow! We can't stay here anymore. This place is contaminated. We're leaving. And they left to go back home. Don't play politics with Gotama. So Gotama considered, you know, what? Me? Kill a cow? Impossible. So when the daylight came, he saw the calf made of straw and he understood what they had done. So then he cursed them. This is in this particular yuga cycle. Gotama, of this particular yuga cycle. The brahmanas should lose all their brahminical strength and the ability to understand the Vedas. So, gradually over the remaining portion of the four yugas, it was gone. So, therefore, when the Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, I think, approached Lord Vishnu saying, you gotta do something. So he agreed to appear, and he appeared as Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas, which Parashar understood, and he basically had to reconstruct the eternal Vedas, the four. Subsequently, those four were then lost, but it wasn't like, you know, the beginning of the day of Brahma, it was this yuga cycle. Vyasadeva became, or Krishna himself appeared, and he then restored the Vedas, and the Puranas and Itihasas. So, when he restored the Puranas and Itihasas, they contained the essence of those four Vedas. Subsequently, from the time Vyasadeva compiled them, 94% are missing. But at least, and some portions of the Puranas are missing. But at least we're confident on the authority of Sridhar Swami that the Vishnu Purana and Bhagavad Purana are available in their fullness. That's the response to Iskandar. Iskandar's going to go, oh, come on, or something like that. But that's the authority upon which we say they express the essence of the Vedas. And there's other quotes that we'll see as we go along. They express the essence of the... the very next verses that cover this subject. Something else? On the ladies' side? Put your hands up so he... Okay. Yes.
Guru Maharaj, this question is from the yesterday's discussion on Shabda Pratikshan Anumana. May I ask that? Or?
Question on Shabda?
You're going
back a little bit.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. Just speak slowly and clearly.
Sure.
Hold the microphone closer. There we go. Thank you.
So for an adult, Jiva Goswami's brilliant explanation of Shabda is the best way to the process of acquiring knowledge makes sense.
In comparison to Pratyaksha and Anuman.
Yes.
Yeah.
It totally makes sense. It's a brilliant explanation.
No problem.
Yeah. But so for me, the question is, when it comes to children, it appears to me that when there is an overemphasis of Shabda, which is not balanced by proper sense perceptory activities, it seems to have a counterproductive effect. So I was wondering, is it okay to come, or is it, I'm basically wondering.
It's more than okay. It's necessary. But yeah, as a mother, you're really into motherhood, which is really nice. Your son is very fortunate to have such a nice mother. You want to engage the mind and senses in a way that's going to attract Krishna. You know, you can do things with the mind and senses that for a child looks like fun. But for a Vaishnavi mother, it's distracting from Shabda. So you think of how to engage those other territories in something that's remind them of Krishna. Shabda. What do you think?
So although we don't have scriptural support, it's okay to still give importance to pratiksha and anumana in the life of a child, right?
I didn't get it.
So although we don't have scriptural evidence, like scriptural support...
You don't have to do what?
Although we don't have scriptural support or evidence, like... because
we don't have the resources and tools to support that, is what you're saying?
Scriptural evidence. Scriptural evidence?
Scriptural evidence. To support which?
That Shabda and Anuman is also important in a child's knowledge.
Yes, we do. Madhvacharya accepts, Jiva Goswami accepts, because Madhvacharya accepts and supports it. With one condition. If there's a conflict between something that one of them says and something that Shabda says, Shabda rules. Otherwise, we have to use a little, this very valuable thing called common sense that some people just don't seem to have. But if we have common sense, then we can go forward and use a little common sense and engage. And is that all right? Okay. Put your hands up. Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I really appreciated your point on how we actually need character to be able to access the Vedas. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit on how to, keep that mood in mind.
How to do what?
How to keep that mood regarding developing...
Keep the names?
No, keeping the mood.
Keep the mood.
Keep the mood in mind regarding developing the character.
Regarding which?
Regarding developing character.
Developing character.
Developing character and how we could qualify ourselves.
I like it when people, can say six syllables in one syllable. Some people really have a gift for that.
How we could qualify ourselves to be able to really access the scriptures, because we, we're very fortunate that we have the scriptures available so readily for us to read.
Well, develop... there's so many things. This is, an education question. And, you know, there's so many elements to education. But, you know, one of the essential elements to education is a teacher and a willing student, a qualified teacher and a willing student. The combination of those two makes it possible for character to develop. Just like, you know, one of the biggest places of development of character is in the home, in a family. Mother and father and child. The mother and father have that education responsibility. They don't just like send their child off to a school and the school's going to give them character. It happens in the home. And schools really don't do that much. They give information but not character. So once one has, you know, grown up in a family, has gotten whatever character one has, one then also has the opportunity for friends, peers and superiors from whom I can, in their association, further imbibe character. You know, I see the difference between character and yikes when there isn't character. So I have affinity for where there's character. And I receive that just by association. I see, here's what, you know, the scripture says that's what it is. There's the example of what it is. And then I can learn from that association. So it's primarily through association that character develops. Sangat, sanjayate kama, in the language of Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada referred to that over and over, over and over. Sangha means association. Sanjaya, kama. Desire comes from the association we keep, or character comes from the association we keep. The modes of nature with which we conduct our lives by certainly is affected by our previous association, but it's molded anew by our present association. So let me seek out character building message, seek out that association, those who are superiors and those who are peers, who I understand have good character. You know, so what's the standard for good character? We have our Shabda Praman. We should know what Bhagavad Gita says, what's good character? Just like the prior discussion, Arjuna asks, how do I know who's self-realized? How do I know who's beyond the modes of nature? By what symptoms? How do they walk? How do they sit? How do they speak? Like that. Those sections tells us persons of character, and we associate with those people and learn from them. Okay? Clarissa, you have something? No? Over here? We're trying to squeak in before the RT starts. So.
Yes. Hare Krishna Maharaj. The slide where there is a difference between laukik and alaukik, in the Vedas, there is an alaukik language and...
That's just the pronunciation is laukika and alaukika.
Alaukika, okay. Yes. So on the left side where there was itihasas and puranas and Jiva Goswami talked...
The right side.
Yes. So where they talked about the meter and the language and where you discuss.
That means there's meter and language over here on the left side.
Right.
The same rules do not apply on the right side. So there's differences. Right. There are differences, although there's non-difference because their source is the same. That was the message. Got it? On the left side, there's rules about intonation and about word order.
Right.
Differences
that don't
apply over there.
Right.
But that's the difference. Now, the non-difference is they're the same source.
They're the same source.
Just like you might speak with some learned person in this way, you might speak with your children in that way, but not change the message. Just the audience is different, so you say it differently.
Right. So my question was, since the message is same, so that has to be a laukikal language, has to be accepted?
Sure. And the alaukika language has to be accepted. But if you're a snob, if you're a puffy-wuffy, you laukika folks, you take a hike. Okay?
Yes. I had another question, but I'll ask afterward about Sridhar Swami, but I'll ask later.
Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.